What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, the super awesome James Mulvaney. He's the CEO of Q and the founder of Radio.co, Podcast.co, and Matchmaker.fm. This dude is very busy. And we talked about so many different things. First of all, I don't know if you've heard this on the show before or not, but a lot of my guests has actually come from Matchmaker.fm, and anyone who's starting a podcast, interview-based, I highly recommend it. It's been super helpful in the journey. It's pretty much just like connecting guests and hosts together. So with that, I was super lucky to come across James' profile on there, had him on the show, and this episode was so great. We talked about managing multiple brands and how he's able to have all these different companies under an umbrella and how he keeps up with them. We talk about separating work from home, kind of like hobbies that he or habits that he has to make that difference. Boundaries to set as an entrepreneur. So he talks about his younger years right out of college when he was starting and how he's evolved and changed now as an entrepreneur, a business owner who has tons of employees under him. And then we also get on a little talk about how do you socialize, just kind of networking and socializing post COVID and what that was like. So that was a really fun conversation. I enjoyed this whole talk and I hope you enjoy this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
All right. Yeah, let's get right into it. What's up? So today's guest for the listener out there is James Mulvaney. He is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you've got a lot going on, Radio.co founder, the Matchmaker.fm founder, the Podcast.co founder, and the QCEO.
Yes, that's correct. I don't do all of this on my own. I have a great team around me. Otherwise, I probably would go insane. But yeah. We're running a different... We've got a portfolio of businesses that are all in the audio space.
Mm, that makes sense. Okay, so how did that come to be? Did you start on one and then it branched out into a portfolio? Or were you just like, let me see how many things I can do in once?
No, it started when I was young and I was like finishing school, you know, this podcast about hobbies, and we kind of just touched on this before we kind of jumped
in.
I was really keen on radio. I wanted to be a DJ. I sort of started getting
experience. You got the voice for it.
Thanks. Yeah. So I started working for local radio stations. I then learned how you could broadcast online, and I had a few different radio shows on the internet, on various different websites and things. And that was kind of like, but at the same time, I was also learning how to build websites, and I was sort of teaching myself to code, and I was kind of quite a nerdy kid. So I got involved in radio really just by being passionate about it. And in the end, I decided to go off to university, and my degree was in multimedia, which is kind of sounds really old fashioned now, but it's basically web programming, design, e-commerce, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I basically put the two together and I started a business selling services, streaming media services to the radio industry. And the first incarnation of that business existed for a few years. And then we launched Radio.co probably about 7 years ago now. And, you know, it's gone from strength to strength. We've got about 5,000 radio stations that now operate using our platform, which is pretty cool.
Interesting. And so what are the different companies in your platforms doing? So I know Matchmaker.fm, that's the matching podcast guests with hosts. But is one of them like a podcast hosting platform? Do you have like what are the other companies you've got in the portfolio?
Yeah, so Radio.co, which obviously we just talked about, that's a live streaming and radio platform. Basically allows anyone to create a radio station, and we have it used by everything from like DJs and musicians through to like brands. So it could be football teams or like soccer clubs, or it could be you know, other sports organizations, charities, basically anyone who's looking to broadcast audio to the internet.
Interesting.
Podcast.co, as you say, podcast hosting platform. We have, you know, podcasts in a whole different sort of variety of industries that use our platform to sort of stream their podcasts. And Matchmaker, which is kind of like one of the newer ventures. We launched that just at the start of lockdown. Again, it kind of came around as a sort of passion project because we had the podcast business already, and we were kind of looking at different ways that we could market and sell our services. And obviously a lot of podcasts are based on interviews like this one, you know.
Yeah.
So we thought, wouldn't it be cool if we had a way of connecting podcasters and guests? So we had some spare development resource, and we thought, let's try and build a really basic version of this and see how it goes. And we kind of initially started with just like a couple of Google forms, just to see if there was some interest in the market. And sure enough, a lot of people were looking for a solution to find guests for their show or to find shows that they could appear on. So we decided to kind of put it into a product, and that's where we kind of came up with the idea of Launch Matchmaker.
I mean, it's pretty awesome. Like I said before the show started, I've had an unreal number of guests come from this platform, so I'm super thankful for it. One thing that does come to mind in all the things you're doing, now that podcasting has become insanely popular in the past, I don't know, maybe like 5 to 10 years, it's just really absurdly blown up. How do you manage to stay competitive? Because I know with Matchmaker, there's like Podmatch, there's a different hosting platforms. I'm not too sure on the radio side, but like, how have you managed to stay competitive with all of that?
I think it's, we've got, number one, we've got like a suite of complementary products. So, you know, lots of radio stations will have a podcast, and a lot of podcasters will want to be on other shows as well as host their own, because it's a great way of, you know, again, a lot of people who are in podcasting either have like a business or they've got a side hustle going on. So again, appearing on podcasts is a fantastic way to kind of promote your wares or promote yourself, grow your personal brand. So I think, you know, as a business as a whole, having products that are, you know, broadly speaking in audio, allows us to, you know, cross promote between the different brands. We do have separate teams, especially with development, working on each product, because again, you can kind of, as a company, you need to keep, you can diversify too much and take your eye off the ball. So it's important to have like resource focused on each platform. But I think also just being innovative and thinking forward, and like with Matchmaker, for example, there are kind of some competitors now. When we first launched, there was probably one other company or one other platform not really doing a very good job of it. I know like Podmatch, as you just mentioned, and a couple of the others, they've launched afterwards. So, of course, you know, if you're sometimes first to market, kind of gives you a little edge as well.
Yeah.
And then just having like a good marketing strategy, I think, too, is kind of important. So when we launched Matchmaker, that was an interesting one because we were launching it. We didn't really have a business model in place. We kind of thought, well, we'd just grow the community to begin with, and then we'll focus on trying to monetize it.
Hmm.
But of course, you don't want to launch a product which is a community when there's no members, because podcasters wouldn't want to sign up if there wasn't a good selection of guests, and vice versa. So that was tricky because we needed to figure out a strategy to try and kind of populate the platform before kind of like making it too public, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And I think the timing was quite good, of course, because I think we launched February, March 2020, lockdown happened, and then more people were looking to start podcasts, and more people were looking to, you know, find people to interview remotely. So it was kind of like
Looking for people to connect with.
Let's just record a podcast. It's just a way of actually having some kind of human contact. Exactly. Yeah. And it's a great thing to do. And it's a good for you, teaches you communication skills, and you meet some interesting people along the way. So yeah, that was kind of a timing thing, I think, to a certain extent. But also then we played around with various different marketing methods because we didn't have a business model for it. And we're not a company that's got, you know, millions of dollars in VC funding behind us or anything. So we couldn't afford to burn loads of cash. So we kind of just, myself and our CMO, we were just like a two-man team promoting it to begin with. And we did a lot of LinkedIn outreach, you know, like automated LinkedIn outreach, but specifically targeting people who we thought would be good as guests or people who apparently had, you know, clearly had podcasts.
Yeah.
And because you know, we weren't trying to sell anything and it wasn't sort of super spammy, we actually had really good response rate.
Wow.
You know, and we had lots of great feedback coming in, you know, initially from just doing outreach and just using a few different tools to automate the process, you know, sending connection requests and follow up messages and that kind of thing.
I like that. That's a really cool strategy, especially because it was What I like that you did is that you were providing clear value and in a non-salesy way. You were just exactly. trying to connect people and build this yeah. community. And I've been a part of my fair share of communities that have been well-established and not so well-established. And it really is like getting people on there and getting people other than the creators of the community to consistently participate. That's like the really hard thing that I've noticed.
Yeah. And of course, like one, I suppose a lot of community type platforms or you know, Facebook groups, you know, as you grow, you do then come into problems where to begin with, it was great. And it was a small community. And when we kind of got past, say, I don't know, 20,000 members. I think we're up to like 50,000 members now, which is quite insane. Wow. Yeah, but it's, and we still haven't spent a huge amount of marketing, which is a cool thing as well. You know, it's still, it's kind of, when you get to a certain level, it kind of self-promotes because people will share it. And if they get good results from it,
I actually do that. I'm telling you, yeah. like, I can't speak highly enough.
Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate yeah. it.
And so that was kind of, that was the strategy and yeah. My point is now we've started to having to think a little bit more about how we can kind of control spam and that sort of stuff because we are getting certain, not like a lot, I guess when you compare it to the sort of trolls on Twitter and stuff, but you do get like a lot of people who sign up and they'll just kind of cane it. They'll either just be sending podcast requests to everyone that they possibly can, or they'll start promoting other stuff, you know, trying to sell their book or yeah. a course or whatever. And we want to try and stay away from that if we can. And we've now got that new challenge of how do we keep the quality high, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, that does sound like quite a challenge. Funny enough, that's a challenge Twitter's also facing. It seems like keeping the quality up.
Oh, yeah, they seem to be facing a lot of challenges. I mean.
Yeah, that's true. But so one thing you touched on a little bit earlier that I'm really curious about is you were mentioning that you still want to be focused with the work that you're doing, yet you want to stay innovative and have this whole new suite of products. So how do you manage that like fine line of balance between focusing on what you're trying to accomplish and yet still innovating and coming up with all these different products to match?
I think it becomes the more you grow and the bigger your team gets, it becomes trickier to keep focused and know where to put your time, for sure. I think as well, sometimes you can kind of focus on one thing at a time and then move on to the next. So it doesn't, you know, although I'm running kind of effectively four different businesses, I might spend a couple of months where I'm really focusing in on one thing. So for example, with radio.co, it's a fairly mature platform and we haven't, you know, we've probably had the first couple of years when we launched, we were innovating, we were building lots of new features. And since then we've slowed down the pace of innovation. We're still innovating. We still launch new products within that business, but it's not like as fast paced as it perhaps was for the first few years. Mm-hmm. And for example, with Matchmaker, during lockdown 2020, that was like my big focus for the sort of that year. I was like really focused on Matchmaker and sort of not as focused on the other platforms. So I think, from my perspective anyway, I'll go through phases where I'll look at different, you know, if something needs attention or if something, if I have a really good idea that's maybe been sat around for a while, I won't necessarily act on it straight away. Again, I think this is one of the things you learn as an entrepreneur. When I look back at myself like 10 years ago when I was just finishing university, I would just try and chase everything I was, any kind of thought or idea I had, I'd be like, right, let's register a domain
That's
name
like where
and start
I'm at.
Building a website and
in life.
Yeah, you kind of you end up just kind of not really achieving anything. So yep. you learn to sort of rein it in a little bit and think, okay, well that's a good idea, but I don't necessarily have to do that right now. Maybe I could look at that when we've got some time to look at that, or we've got some spare resource. You know, for example, with Matchmaker, we probably had the idea a year before we actually launched it, but you know, we didn't necessarily have to make it happen straight away. But I don't know, sometimes as well, you know, it is about timing. So
yeah,
it's trying to balance it up really.
Yeah. And I think, one thing, so there, it like could go two ways. I feel like some
frozen.
Did it freeze?
Yes. No, we're back on now.
Okay. Sweet. I feel like it could go two ways. Like some people would say, if this is something you really want, chase that idea, don't wait. But then the other side is, if you're already focusing on something, I feel like that year you had, you could test the idea or tinker around with it or like ask questions, maybe like have those Google surveys and whatnot. And like, you don't have to have a pure launch, but you could start doing some preliminary research without taking away resources from your main focus.
Yeah, well, that's what we did with Matchmaker. It was, it started life as two Google forms. One was like, hey, you're looking for great guests. And one was like, do you want to get booked on podcasts? And once we, and they weren't just like enter your name and email. We actually asked a few questions, like tell us what sort of guests you're looking for, or tell us what sort of shows you want to get booked on. And when we knew that people were responding, you know, to those forms, and we put them out, you know, you can go out to various different things like Product Hunt, for example, and just kind of, it doesn't have to, you don't have to get like thousands and thousands of responses. But once we had, I don't know, 20 responses to each form, we thought, well, there's definitely a product in this. Let's spend some time planning this and building it. Again, what we had when we first launched Matchmaker is kind of different to what we have now. We've reiterated and we've built on the platform. One of the products that or features we've just added is agency functionality, because we had a lot of people coming to us and saying, well, I represent, you know, I've got a PR company. And
I get that. I represent
like 10 different people, and we want to have multiple profiles and manage them all under one, you know, one roof. And again, that's becoming part of a bigger part of the business as well, because obviously PR companies tend to want to pay more money than sort of individuals or smaller,
very much so,
sort of indie podcasters. So, you know, that's become, but we didn't think about that when we first launched. It wasn't even on the, you know, on the agenda at all. It's something that's become apparent, and you, I suppose you have to listen to customer feedback and try and react on what people want.
That's something I wasn't even aware of until I started a podcast, and like another episode that I'm doing today, it's because someone reached out to me and they're like, hey, I run a PR firm. Your podcast would be a good match for this one person we have you interested. So I never realized how big of a thing that is.
Well, I guess it's like PR agencies tip, you know, traditionally they would be like focused on getting publicity in newspapers or magazines.
Like articles.
Or articles on Forbes or whatever it might be. But nowadays, I guess podcast is just another form of PR, isn't it?
Like, especially that's where people's attention's at.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you've got a lot more time actually to tell your story and talk about what you're doing or your kind of goals, your mission, or your business than you would sometimes. You know, if someone's flicking through a magazine, they might miss the article altogether. So,
totally agree. And to touch on like the form that you had, so this is something I've been wondering how to do myself. So how, like, what advice would you give to someone trying to create their own like feedback form or some kind of like doing product research? Like, how did you go about that? And what would you do? You know, what would you change if you did it again or anything like that?
With Matchmaker, I don't know. I think we kind of got it pretty right. I'm trying to think what, like how we came up with the questions. I think we just looked at, as I say, we were looking at different ways of marketing the podcast side of the business, and we thought, well, a lot of guests who appear on podcasts probably want to start a podcast eventually themselves. So we thought, well, if we can get to people who want to be guests, then maybe they'll like, then launch a podcast on our platform. But then, as I say, out of this idea, then we thought, well, maybe there's a platform in itself just to connect these two groups of people together. I guess we just sat down and we thought, well, what would I want to know? If I, for example, if I'm a podcaster, I want to know, okay, well, number one, like, what sort of podcast have I got? Let's say I've got something where I'm talking about, I don't know, health and beauty. I need to know what sort of credentials that guest has got, which are relevant to health and beauty. You know, I'm not going to be wanting to interview someone, you know, from a different sector. It has to be someone that's got to be, have relevant experience or qualifications. So you start thinking, well, okay, how do we break that profile down into something that's kind of applicable for a product? So with Matchmaker, obviously you can have different categories, you know, because when someone's searching, you can type in keywords and stuff, but it's much easier from a programming perspective if you can link people together saying, okay, your podcast is in the health and beauty category, and this person who wants to be a guest who runs a, you know, chain of beauty salons or whatever it might be is also in that category. You know, there's a kind of clear link there. So I think having that understanding of, you know, simple stuff like how to like building relational databases, which is kind of, when I first started out, I was kind of writing code, and I don't do that anymore, but I have that understanding of like, you know, if you're building a web application, you know, how you can kind of connect data sets together. And that's really useful. And I think when you're designing, I suppose, product surveys, that's probably kind of one of the things you need to be thinking about too.
Yeah. And did you base it off of kind of like a dating site or something like that? I know one of my, ask is I was at, I was like in my company, I was working, one of my coworkers walked by when I was on Matchmaker. He's like, dude, what are you doing at work? And I was like, no, it's not the kind of matches you think.
You're not the first person that said this, you know, believe me. It was kind of, It was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek name, like it was done on purpose because we kind of wanted to, you know, riff off that. I'm trying to think if we came up with the name after or before we kind of created this MVP as in these Google Forms. I think it was probably afterwards, maybe. I don't know. This was like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah. No, but, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and no, it's funny because we have had lots of people say that, and it's weird actually because one of my colleagues was saying to me the other day. Apparently, we've actually had people signing up. Who are looking for love on the platform. Like, they've obviously misunderstood, you know, maybe they're not, like, because the website's obviously in English. I think these profiles were not in English, but they were obviously misinterpreting what this product was, maybe, or what the site was. I don't know. But anyway, we've had to kind of, again, it's one of these things I'm going back into earlier about spam. I don't know if this is, like, bots creating these profiles and the AI is just confusing what Matchmaker actually is or what. I don't know, but it was a bit weird.
That is funny. Yeah, you have some people coming on to matchmaker.fm and they think this podcast are interviews for love. That's probably what's
exactly,
going on.
Yeah.
All right, to switch gears a little bit, to talk about kind of what you do during the day, what kind of habits or routines do you have throughout your day? Like, how are you able to manage all of these different things you got going on?
Okay, so I must admit my routine has changed a lot over the past few years because we used to be very much office based. So we had a team of, at the time, like 25, 30 people, very much in one location here. We were based in Manchester in England. And
are you a Manchester United fan?
Oh, do you know, I now live near Manchester United, the ground, but I used to live in the city centre, which was near Manchester City, which is the other big soccer team here. So I don't really support football, to be honest. It's not my thing. But
I don't know if you saw the United
Manchester
game
United,
this weekend.
Like, most people around here support that. So I don't know. Anyway,
they must have not been happy after Liverpool.
Oh, you know, I don't follow. The thing that annoys me is how when there's a match on, the roads around here get completely crazy. It's hard to get home sometimes. If I'm going in or out of town, it can be really tricky. You have to time it right, so you just avoid that. I've forgotten your question.
Routines.
Yeah. So I was previously, we were very much office based, and I've been Monday to Friday, pretty much 9 to 5. In the early days, I did that whole thing of working as an entrepreneur. You know, when it was me on my own for the first few years, I'd be up till like working till 11 at night. I'd probably scrap that about 10 years ago now, because it's just not sustainable. You know, I've always been a big believer in delegation. And as soon as the business was at a point where I could start hiring, that's what I started to do. And this is how I've managed to grow, you know, different companies and manage multiple brands. I think having a good management team who work alongside you is really crucial. So, again, to begin with, when it was like, say, up to maybe 10, 15 staff, it was very much just like me and then everyone else.
Yeah.
I had much more input in like the marketing, the development, and operations. Now I've got like a CMO, a COO, and a CTO. So they really sort of oversee most of the day-to-day and allows me to sort of focus on the bigger picture. And, you know, I still like to get involved where I can, and I'm still kind of quite opinionated when it comes to, so certainly marketing, I'm, you know, really keen on that.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I just keep good lines of communications with my kind of, my management team. And, you know, we have a meeting once a month and we just go over any kind of qualms that people have got or problems. We also focus on, you know, what we're doing right, what we're not doing right, and all that kind of stuff. You know, in terms of day to day, you know, obviously now, you know, it's a lot of calls, it's a lot of Slack. I miss that buzz of being in the office. To be honest, I try to do like 1 or 2 days a week in the office now. But realistically, like, it's very, even, you know, sometimes I went in the other day, it was like 3 or 4 people in the office.
Yeah. And you got a puppy
now. We're a team.
Now, I mean.
Yeah. We're a team of like 45 now. And it's kind of, admittedly, not everyone's in Manchester now as well. We've kind of, as you know, as a business, it's become a lot more distributed because we've realized we don't really need to be all, you know, in the same place. And we've halved our office space. So we used to have probably about 35 seats in the office. Now we're down to like maybe 15 or 20. Just because there's no need to have that much office space anymore. So I think that's changed a lot. In terms of habits, I try and separate work and home. So you know, I've got a separate office, which kind of, you know, I still sit at a desk and sit at a computer. And I've always preferred to do that versus being on like the couch on my laptop.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, sometimes I do, but most of the time I'm sat on my desk just because I think you kind of, you're going and you're in work mode then. Likewise, when I go have lunch, I'll try and do lunch away from my desk because I think, again, it kind of, you need a break. You need to get away from the computer. And now I recently got a puppy, which was cool. And that's been really, really good in terms of it's forced me to, you know, you have to get up a certain time every morning. So there's no lines. You haven't got the opportunity of like sleep. You know, you've got to be up 7 a.m. to walk the puppy and take him out.
Puppies don't let you snooze.
No, it's absolutely serious. Not. And he's right now, he's actually gnawing on my chair, which is kind of annoying. But yeah, it's so that's been really good. And I think sort of for the mental health and everything, it's been great as well. And it's something that, you know, it's weird. It kind of completely takes over your life, but in a positive way. And I could never have done that. I don't know how people would raise a puppy. You know, he's just about to turn 6 months old, so he's kind of like leveling out and settling down a little bit. But for the first couple of months, it was pretty crazy and pretty intense. And I think, how would I have did that if I was going to the office for, you know, eight hours a day? It just wouldn't have been viable.
Yeah, I don't know how you feed him or anything like that.
Yeah, well, you know, they just go insane. So yeah, that's pretty much it, really. Just taking what we used to be like in the office, but moving it home. But as I say, I think the thing I miss the most is just having that kind of energy, that, because I don't think having meetings, and again, for important meetings, we try and do them face to face still. So like our monthly management catch up, we try and do in the office, I think. And again, what we started to do is have more like group workshops where we say, okay, everyone's got to come into the office. If we're going to focus on one area of the business, we'll get everyone who's relevant to that particular team in. And make sure that, you know, that time we're spending together in the office face to face is well spent. Whereas I think before you look at it, there's a lot of like kind of what do you call it, like water cooler talk sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you know, you have like really a good day, but it's really intense focus
conversations and stuff. That was actually one of the questions I was going to ask, was how do you keep those lines of communication open? But I think you did a great job of answering that naturally. How you said. I really like when you have the big team meetings, the important ones at the office, because that's one of those things where you do, it's like the side candid conversations that people don't normally get at home are really important for times like that. And then I also think group workshops are such a fantastic idea.
They are. And it's one of these things, we never really used to do them. And now they've become so important and crucial parts of the business. And I think... you know, it's interesting because it is effort to coordinate them, especially now we've got people who are maybe not here in Manchester. It's not as easy for them to come in. So we have to organize like transport, sometimes accommodation, that sort of thing. But it's worth it. And it totally, and the feedback we've had from people since we really started doing these maybe at the start of last year, because we realized we'd been out of the office for a couple of years and we've got a very relaxed approach to, some companies will like say, oh, you know, have to go in 2 or 3 days a week. We basically said, if you wouldn't go in, you can go in. If you don't, you don't. Some people go in more than others. Some people would never go in at all and work entirely from home and vice, you know. We've just been fairly relaxed about it. But I think we got to a point where we were like, well, we need some kind of structure. But I think equally, if we turn around to everyone and said, right, well, you've got to be in 2 days a week, we'd probably start losing staff because some people would be like, well, I want the flexibility. I'm going to look elsewhere. So it's kind of just trying to find that balance. And I think this is a good way of doing it.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's kind of how my company operates. It's like I'm in San Diego, so not everyone's in San Diego. We have people in LA and all over. So if we had to come in the office, that would be a bit tougher. But we have like a quarterly all hands where we'll all like, they'll even offer to fly in people who are like from Michigan or something.
Yeah.
If it's like a really big company wide meeting, maybe the halftime huddle, like, so Q2, end of Q2, we'll do that. But it's like normally we're not required, or if you're there, like I'm in San Diego, so I go into the office, I try to once a week, and I do that because I have noticed it's a lot easier to grease the wheels when you're in person with people and just get the ball rolling along than waiting on messages and emails.
Yeah, I completely agree.
One thing you did mention a little earlier also was the puppy's been really great for your mental health. Is there anything else that you do to kind of take care of that healthy side of the mind?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, you know, I kind of touched on it earlier. I think setting boundaries as an entrepreneur is important. You know, maybe when you're 20, in your early 20s, you can kind of just run at it full throttle, you know, all hours of the day, work till 11 p.m. And I did that for a few years. And I don't regret doing that. I think that was fine. Could I do that now? Absolutely not, because it would kill me. You know, I need to kind of switch off. And as I say, the way I've been able to do that over the years is delegate in, you know, hiring a team around me who are capable of doing stuff. Because back then I was doing pretty much everything, right? And that's where a lot of entrepreneurs start. Nothing wrong with that. But it's not sustainable. So now, you know, I like to, in every evening pretty much I cook. I think I find that really relaxing. You know, I enjoy the process. And of course, if you're cooking for, even if it's just like for you and your partner, it's great. But then if I have like friends around, you know, I've got like, there's gonna be five of us tomorrow night. I'm having a sort of like a small dinner party, which will be good. And, you know, I'm already like, it gives you something to think about as well. Cause I'm like, okay, well, I've got a dinner party. I'm not just going to throw something together. It's got to be something to impress people. So you've got to plan it.
Of course. You got to have the right recipe.
Yes, exactly. And of course, then you think, well, what do I do? You know, what cuisine do I cook? And I like to cook all sorts of stuff. So I'm going to go with lamb shanks tomorrow, I think. Ooh. Yeah, I've seen a Gordon Ramsay recipe, which looks good. So I think, and I don't think I've ever cooked lamb shanks before. So, you know, it's a new
okay,
thing
to so try. When you got a dinner party, you're not going to, like, you personally, you're going to challenge yourself. You're not going to go with the tried and true. You're going to be like, I'm going to hit this one and we're going to see how it goes.
It depends. Nice. I think it depends on, like, you can sometimes do either or, really. You know, I know what you mean. You kind of like, I've no, because I probably like, when did I start cooking properly? Like 5 years ago, maybe my mid to late 20s. Before then, I really didn't cook much, or I was like, my idea of cooking was basically just throwing pre-made things together and, yeah, you know, frozen food or whatever. I think, you know, then you kind of get, once you've been cooking for like 2-3 years, you maybe then start, like you say, you've got your sort of tried and tested things that you're really good at doing. And it's easy to slip into that. Well, I've got that in my comfort zone and just kind of go to stuff. But you've got to try and, it's one of these things, you can never ever know everything about food or
oh my god, there's cuisines. No way. The, you know, the amount always, of different types of foods, oh yeah, man.
And just techniques, you know, and there's still things that I think, oh, I wish I could just do that a bit better, or, you know, you do it really well one time and next time you don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of, so that's one thing I like to do, to sort of switch off. The other thing is socializing. You know, I've always been a big believer in having like a social life outside of work. You know, so I always have friends are hugely important to me. You know, I like to go away with friends and do all sorts of stuff, and we have crazy times together. And yeah, it's always good.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier how socializing helps keep you sane. Mm. This is something I've been thinking of recently, and I'd like to hear your take. Is I've always considered myself a very social person, but recently I've actually been working on, thanks to like having a podcast, I was also doing cold calling and sales. I've been working on writing this book on active listening, and it's led me down the path of socializing in general and making friends. And I've had people come up to me and ask me, not like in person, but more online, whenever I post little blogs and posts, on like, how do you start socializing? Like, for someone who's not really used to that, like, how do you have any tips or anything like that that you would have someone, like, how do you socialize?
That's a really good question. So when I, again, this is quite a long time ago now, but when I, before I went to university, I was like not a confident, I was not as outgoing as I am now. Like, I was pretty shy kid, you know, locked up in his bedroom behind his computer.
Yeah.
I had friends, you know, when I was sort of finishing school and college, but before I went off to uni, I wasn't like very outgoing. So I was going to uni. It was kind of far away from where I grew up. And I was like, I almost hit like that reset switch. I was like, I'm just going to force myself outside of my comfort zone. And it didn't feel natural to begin with. You know, kind of like going and speaking to people, that I didn't really know and stuff. Cause I was like, well, how do I do that? And for me, it was just about, I don't know, throwing myself into the deep end and just kind of sort of adopting this fearlessness, even though I was still secretly really scared, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, as then when you kind of you know, I kind of then when I finished uni, I kind of like moved to a new city. So I moved to Manchester. And again, I didn't know a lot of people when I first moved here. And I still probably wasn't really as confident and outgoing as I am now, you know? And yeah. Again, I was faced with that new challenge of how do I meet friends? And, you know, you kind of just try and, I think you riff off people who have got similar interests to you, you know? So if you meet some people who you think, okay, get on with this guy or this girl really well, you know, maybe they can introduce me to their friends, because the chances are, I think if you get like with I've got a really good close group of friends now, but I went for a phase where I kind of like I kept going to lots of parties and I knew loads and loads of people, and I still do know a lot of those people. But then you end up with, I think as you kind of get into your late 20s and early 30s, you kind of have your core group of kind of close friends, you know, if you're lucky anyway. I consider myself quite lucky.
I've noticed when you slow down the drinking, certain friends go away.
Yeah. And also I think you kind of, I don't know, you don't feel the need to kind of sort of impress as many people or go out and speak to as many people. But then of course I think you can also go too far the other way and like, you know, stop me. I think you can never stop meeting people and never like close yourself off.
Yeah.
You know, you can always meet new people. So, and again, it's funny because like, again, as you kind of grow up and stuff, people go and what's my dog doing? He's pulling apart a cardboard box. Can you hear that?
Yeah. Classic puppy move right there.
Yeah, he's like, okay, you're ignoring me, so I'm going to try and get some attention. Where was I? So some of your friends will start moving away to different countries, for example, and which is kind of a shame, and it's just a case of still just staying in touch with those people. I think that's always important.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one thing COVID did a great job of is reminding us that through technology, you can keep in contact with anyone, anywhere. At least for me, it really helped. But yeah, I totally agree. One thing you said is you were kind of like pushing yourself from your comfort zone. You do get kind of afraid. I, to this day, like many events, social things freak me out. And I would consider myself a very social person. Like,
yeah,
I don't
same.
I've started from scratch in many different cities and always came out with some really close friends. Like I feel comfortable in that. It's more I've done it so many times that I feel confident in my ability to do that. I may be scared going into a networking event or like something like that. I may have the little jitters, but it's more I try to remind myself like I've felt this before and I've come out of it, you know, unscathed, so I can do it again. And just like pushing yourself a little bit there. Yeah.
I remember, I completely agree with what you said there. And I remember, a year and a bit ago, it would have been November 21, I suppose. I went to a networking event. It was the first, it was like a big fancy dinner, you know, like where you sat around tables and it was the first big event I've been to, I think, since lockdown, where I was going in and I didn't really know anyone there. Like there was a few people who I recognized and I might have spoken to.
Yeah. Oh, and the first one after lockdown when you're brushing off the rust.
And I was like, I went into it because before, right, when I knew when I was sat down, because you obviously have allocated seats, and I was like, as soon as I'm sat down at the table, I'll be fine. But it was just going into that initial room where everyone's like wearing suits, you know, everyone's dressed up, and you're like, whoa, where do I start? You know, this just like, and I arrived kind of, I seem to remember I arrived purposefully late because I was like, I just want to go in and get sat down with people and then I'll be fine. So I'll get talking and I can work the table. But just going into that room with like, I don't know, however many, it was like 500 people or something.
Yeah.
Straight. And I was just, I remember just completely freaking out, feeling like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know. How do I go? And then literally I was like, So I went and started looking at because obviously you go into a situation like that and everyone is, you know, everyone's got their little groups or little cliques and quite often people know each other and stuff. And as I said, I knew a few people, didn't really know people that well. So I was like, I went up to the, they had some screens where they showed the list of tables and whose names they were. And I used that, and there was obviously a queue of people who were like looking up to see where they were sitting to. And I went up to that and started looking. And I used that as a way to get speaking to people. So it's like, identify people sometimes who are, not necessarily just like stood awkwardly in the corner, but maybe some people who are like doing something and, you know, it kind of gives you an in almost.
Yeah.
But I've never considered myself like, a power networker or anything like that. I'm not really I'm a good talker, but I don't consider myself a salesperson.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, it is a different breed.
Yeah, it's a very
different breed. Yeah, sometimes you kind of got to go stand in that awkward spot and be like, okay, if there's anyone else standing like me, we're probably similar. Let's strike up a conversation. I've definitely done that. Another thing that really worked for me after COVID, I was noticing I was on my phone a lot more than I normally would be, just because I was probably just didn't want to socialize. I started either turning off my phone or leaving it in the car, and that really helped because it forced me, like, I didn't really have a... I wouldn't do this for networking because then I couldn't get people's contacts, but like if it was like parties or with friends, I would just leave my phone away because it would really force me to not just like be in a corner.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is an easy thing to do, isn't it? Just sit on your phone and use that as a way to distract yourself from...
I mean, we got access to everything you could ever want on the internet. So, yeah. Now, you also mentioned you like traveling. What are some of the cool places you've been to as of recent?
Well, I mean, I've been all over Europe. Which I'd like to go to is anywhere in Asia. But like, yeah, where was the last place I went to? I'm just trying to think now. Oh yeah, I went to Rome, just before Christmas.
Nice.
Yeah. And, before that, I've probably not been away as much since COVID as perhaps before. I'm due to go to Brussels, which is a new place, in a couple of weeks. Never been to Brussels in Belgium before, actually for a meeting. But yeah, travel's always been important to me. And I think getting away on vacation is just really, really crucial, again, for kind of your well-being and to sort of de-stress and kind of stop thinking about work so much.
Yeah, I totally agree. Have you been to Greece before?
I have, yeah. I've been to... I've never actually been to mainland Greece, but I've been to quite a few of the Greek islands. So the Santorini was the one I went to most recently, which is absolutely stunning. Recommend.
Stunning.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to travel Europe a lot more. I have this calling to the Mediterranean. I just really want to check out that whole area. But my most fun recent trip, no, I've had a good bit of fun ones, but my European recent trip, I went to the Greek islands like Paros, Mykonos, and Santorini. And I remember sitting at this restaurant in Santorini, like on top of a mountain, like overlooking the whole island in the ocean. And I had this thought of like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever like visually seen in my life.
It's amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I went about maybe the year before 2019, 2018, something like that. So yeah. And it was stunning. And I think, what are you doing? he's really going in at this cardboard box.
He's going to make it tough for that Brussels trip. You're going to have to find someone to watch him.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Noodle, you're going to have to stop that. I'm going to have to move him out into another room. The thing is, he's going to then stop whining at the door. He was fast asleep for hours before this as well. This is always the case, isn't it? So, yeah, I was going to say on the Mediterranean, my favorite place to go to in the world, and I've been like more than 10 times, is Ibiza. Obviously, it's famous for the nightlife, which is great, but it's also, again, like Santorini, it's absolutely stunning. It's beautiful. You've got like beautiful blue sea, lots of kind of nature and wildlife, and it's great to, I just find it, I don't know, I just have kind of a connection to the island. And I first went actually in 2013. I've been back pretty much every year since.
So. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, James. Well, now we just got the closing questions, a couple rapid fire questions, and then we'll wrap this interview up.
Cool. Shoot.
So first one is, what kind of music do you listen to?
I kind of like all sorts of music. You know, having been like a DJ, and house music is my go-to. But I like indie, I like chill out music, I like pop as well, some classic stuff. I really kind of listen to all sorts. It depends on my mood, really. But house music's my sort of passion, I think.
Yeah, I should have guessed after all those times in Ibiza.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What kind of movies, TVs, or I'm sure you're an expert at this one, podcasts do you recommend for people?
I'm not a big sort of Netflix or TV person. I do watch it, and likewise with podcasts, I listen, I dip in and out of different types of podcasts depending on what I'm interested in on that day. I'm not one of these people who I can't stand like these 24 episode seasons on Netflix. I just, my attention span is too short.
Yeah.
I find it very, very difficult to get into them.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like whatever. And again, I'm not like a big movie buff or a movie nerd or anything like that. So I'll just watch whatever whatever my friends are going to see or whatever people recommend, whatever takes my fancy at the time.
Yeah, that's pretty great. What about any books? Are you a book reader?
Not so much anymore. I used to be, when I was like starting out, I used to be really into like self-improvement and development. I remember like reading books on things like, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is a classic, but also then stuff on like hypnosis and, you know, that kind of thing. So I kind of went through a phase of reading lots of those sort of books. Nowadays, I think you just could like read stuff on the internet. So I don't really go out and buy books anymore.
Yeah, I feel like, don't get me wrong. I don't know if you see my background. I'm still a really big fan of books. But a lot of times I've noticed a lot of these things get condensed into blogs or articles. Like you can really find... you can really find the information that you're looking for a lot easier. And then the last one is, where can people find you and what you're working on in your company?
So I have a website, which is pretty basic, but it has links to all my profiles and companies, which is jamesm.com.
Sweet. I'll throw that in the show notes.
Cool.
James, thanks for joining me. This was an honor, awesome interview and honor to have you for how great Matchmaker's been for me and my podcast.
You might have some editing to do to get rid of that background noise, but thanks very much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for that.